Okay, I'd like to continue the discussion of disease resistance. Okay, looking at a different disease instead of citrus, looking at stone fruits, I'll talk about plum pox virus and some work that we've been doing over the years looking at resistance to plum pox virus. First of all, let me talk a little bit about plum pox virus and the need for resistance. Like citrus canker, it's an exotic disease. It's native to the to Europe. The symptoms of the disease are fruit deformation, as you can see in this this fruit right here, and these fruit right here, and discoloration of the fruit, premature fruit drop, and also leaf symptoms. And highly susceptible varieties are go into decline. This is considered the major disease of stone fruit trees, and it affects plum and all of the stone fruits, peaches, nectarines, apricots, etc. As I said, it was the origin is from Europe. It was found in Bulgaria in 1918, and it spread rapidly throughout the world with the increase in movement of people and trade goods. It was reported in the U.S. in 1999, in Canada in 2000. It was eradicated in the U.S. In Pennsylvania. It's still maybe still in New York, but it's under an eradication program. And in Canada, they have not continued with the eradication program, so it'll probably be there at least for a good while, threatening our stone fruit production in the U.S. Going in the wrong direction here. Okay, so in 1990, we started a program looking at the genetically engineered resistance because there were few reports of resistant germplasm, and we knew that all the material in the U.S. would be susceptible to this disease, and we felt that it would be time to try some new methods of looking at developing resistance, and at that time, we were looking at pathogen-derived resistance. I'll cut the story short here and tell you that in the, since 1990, we had developed genetically engineered resistant plum, highly resistant to plum pox virus. It's called honey sweet. It was tested in Europe, field tested in Europe under high conditions of infection pressure. We tested it for over 17 years in field tests. It has excellent fruit quality, good productivity. No trees ever infected, naturally infected by aphids, which are the carriers of the disease. And we can use it as a resistant parent, and we can transfer the resistance as a single gene dominant trait, and we can use that for breeding. Honey sweet is fully approved for cultivation and consumption in the U.S. by APHIS, FDA, and EPA. And I think at this point it's the only, besides papaya, it's the only fruit crop that is a genetically engineered fruit crop that is approved by these in the U.S. So what we were interested why do I keep going backwards? So the gene is from the coprotein. And I'll tell you a little bit more about the mechanism of resistance, but we use the coprotein gene to develop resistance. We were looking at, as I said, pathogen-derived resistance, and we thought with high expression of the coprotein, we would develop resistance, and this was from some work that was done early by Roger Beachy. We are now looking at other segments of the gene that could be possibly used for resistance, the P1, P3, the NI gene, so there are lots of ways that we can look for resistance. The mechanism of resistance is, we found out, is RNAi based. When we did our transformation, we had a natural occurrence of a head-to-head insertion into the genome of the plum. So we didn't. This wasn't intended. We were looking at full-length sense insertions, but we got this head-to-head, which caused a double-strand RNA to be produced, which then incites the system of RNAi-based resistance. What happens is this double-strand RNA is recognized by the plant. It's a natural mechanism for recognition of double-stranded RNA, and it goes through a phase where this double-stranded RNA is sliced up. It's diced in dicer. These then look for homology. These small pieces of RNA look for homology. When they find the virus this double strand then is produced, and that's destroyed, and therefore the virus is destroyed. Okay, so this is a very well-known mechanism now, but in 1990 it was not even described. So we had something that hadn't been described yet, but that's the mechanism of resistance. We were interested then in seeing, now that RNAi-based resistance is so well known, and there are many constructs are being produced for giving these hairpin constructs, we wanted to see if we could get the same level of resistance using some of these constructs. So here was the honeysweet construct that produced the double-stranded RNA. This was a construct, we call it B14, that we developed basically using off-the-shelf constructs. And we wanted to check this out and see if we could get the same kind of resistance using this and not having to depend on sort of an accidental construct. So what we did was we developed and propagated the B14 plants that had that construct in them, hairpin construct. We looked for, we inoculated plants, looked for visual symptoms, and we used RPCR, ELISA, and then we looked at DNA methylation and small RNAs. DNA methylation and small RNAs are really hallmarks for RNAi-based resistance. And I'm going quickly through this, but just to give you a feel for it, these are some of the major strains of plumpox virus. Some of the natural resistance seems to be strain-specific, so we wanted to make sure that we did not have anything that was strain-specific, so we used some of the major strains. C4 is a genetically engineered plum, but it just has a sense strand of the coprotein of plumpox virus. We looked at honeysweet, B14, Brompton plum is an untransformed plum. And you can see that this is after three cycles of dormancy and then growth in the greenhouse. So these were analyzed at every stage, and this is the after the final analysis. So you can see that the controls totally infected, the B14 and the honeysweet uninfected. Okay, so this suggested that the B14 construct would be effective. Looking at the small RNA, we did find methylation. I won't go through that, but we did see the methylation of both, of course, honeysweet, which we already knew, and also B14. This is looking at the small RNAs. Remember, I mentioned that this RNAi produced small RNAs that then are incite the destruction of the double-stranded RNA. And classically, in this type of a system, you get two sizes of small RNAs. We saw that in B14. We saw that in honeysweet when they were inoculated with all four of the strains. So this was highly indicative of the RNAi mechanism for resistance. So the results of this work were that the full-length coprotein constructs, which we used, looking at hairpin RNA, provide high-level stable resistance to graft-inoculated plumpox virus of the four major strains tested. We went through these three dormancy cycles, four growing seasons. And this is in plant cell tissue and organ culture. So now what we had was we had honeysweet, which is completely approved, and we had B14. So we showed that we could make new constructs that would do the same thing as honeysweet, but what we have right now approved that we could use in breeding programs is honeysweet. And we wanted to move ahead with that. First of all, let me mention this is the honeysweet, International Honeysweet Consortium. It's a group from the U.S. And a number of European countries that have done the work with honeysweet. Dr. Callahan and Dardick at our laboratory, Dr. Ravelinandro in France, who's the main author on this talk, and a number of other people. So this is a very important group that has really done a tremendous amount of work with honeysweet. I want to now move into, real quickly, how we're using honeysweet to breed for new resistant varieties. And we're working with the California industry in this. The California industry is interested in having adapted cultivars for the California industry that are plumpox virus resistant. In case this virus should ever get into California, the industry would be ready. So they wanted more than just honeysweet. They need a suite of varieties adapted to California. How do you do this in a breeding program? Well, you can spend the rest of your life breeding this gene in, or what we decided to do is look to some alternative site, and what we did was look at using the a fast system of breeding. What we did was we used the poplar flowering locust T gene, and we inserted that into plum. We did our transformations, we inserted that into plum, and we developed plum trees that bloomed and flowered, produced fruit, set seed within 1 year. Okay, so when we planted those seed from those that contain the FT gene, when we planted those seed within a year, we had our ripe fruit with seed again. So we changed our breeding system for plum from a 4 to 6 year breeding cycle to a 1 year breeding cycle. And that's the system that we're using to work with the California industry to develop new varieties. So I'll just go through here quickly. We put our flowering T gene into California type plum. This is all from seed because we're in a breeding program anyway, so cultivar transformation is not critical because we're using it for breeding anyway. So we took our early flowering California type, crossed it with honeysweet. In this type of breeding program, you can use markers or phenotyping. This breeding program is essentially the same as any standard breeding program, except that it goes much faster. If you use markers, great. If you use any kind of a strategy, backcrossing, modified backcrossing, outcrossing, it doesn't matter. You just use your standard breeding, except you do it a lot faster. So when you use this, when you cross this, your transgenic with your honeysweet, you wind up with 25% of the seedlings, more or less, and we've analyzed this, and it is about 25%. Will both have the FT gene, early flowering, and also be plumpox virus resistant. They'll carry the gene. We take that 25% because we need the early flowering and we need the honeysweet gene in it, and we take that 25%, we start backcrossing back to California types, okay? What we're doing is just integrating the traits that the California industry needs by using the California types, and we use a modified backcrossing scheme. So what we wind up with in the end are four classes of trees. The first class of tree is plumpox virus resistant. It has a gene from honeysweet, and it's not early flowering. Then we have another that's susceptible, not early flowering, and then we have the early flowerings. We don't want the early flowerings anymore. We don't want to give those to the growers. We want to give the growers are the ones that have the resistance gene, and they're not early flowering, okay? What do we do now? Well, now since those are not early flowering, we have to wait the 4 to 6 years to see what we're actually going to get. But we've done the three back crosses, or as many back crosses as you want, and we know by back cross breeding theory we're going to get a very high percentage of the recurrent parent in. So we've saved all that time that a breeding program spends in just doing the back crossings, right, to trying to get something where you've integrated your trait into a good background. So we've saved all that time. We've done that in 4 years. Now we wait for another 4 years to get our flowering versus the 16 years for back cross breeding using standard breeding techniques. Okay. Now, of course, with honeysweet, we've taken out the early flowering gene. We brought this idea to the regulatory agencies, and they've said once you've taken out the FT gene, we don't consider that gene to be there anymore. It wouldn't be regulated for that gene. The gene from honeysweet is already deregulated, so there's no regulatory burden on these trees that we'll be providing to the industry. They will be genetically engineered because they carry the gene from honeysweet, but they won't be regulated because they don't carry the early flowering gene. And we've had that approved by APHIS. This is what it looks like in the greenhouse. You can see the fruit in the pots. These are, I think, 9-inch pots. And we get a pretty good crop of fruit, good flowering, and we can get flowering and fruiting at the same time. I don't know if it shows it there, but we can get flowering and fruiting at the same time on these plants, so we can breed all year round. So what we've done is we've changed the breeding system. We call this a fast-track breeding system. 1 year generation time, not tied to seasonal climate for flowering or fruiting. We avoid winter and spring injury. We have reduced insect and disease pressure. We can multiple pollinations and fruiting per year. We can use greenhouses, high tunnel, or even we can put these plants in the field. Although we do get a low fruit yield per tree, but we are working on, we have a scheme that we can increase that. Compared to conventional, which we all know, we get a 46-year generation, seasonal climate, extremes, et cetera, et cetera. This is what it looks like in the field. Here you can see flowers and fruit at the same time. They flower with normal plums, but they'll keep flowering through the whole summer, probably till about July, and then it gets too hot. They also flower again in the fall, so we can even do our breeding in the field. And I want to just end this by saying that I think we really have to start putting these ideas together, genetic engineering, marker-assisted selection, and these rapid cycle methods for crop breeding, such as Fast Track, because this is what we're seeing coming down the road, which is actually already here. Most of these diseases and insects are already here. If we rely on conventional breeding, the way we've been practicing it, where we have 4, 10, 15-year breeding cycles, we're not going to be able to sustain our orchards and forests. So this is what we're looking towards. Just for the fast track, this was supported by NIFA, SCRI, and USDA ARS. And this is with our people at our laboratory, UC Davis, Clemson University, and Penn State University. So it's a highly interactive project. That I thank you.
Is FT graft transmissible?
FT does. It's interesting. We did grafting studies. It does not seem to be graft transmissible, except one in some cases when we use a standard rootstock on and with FT on a standard rootstock, we have seen some rootstockers flower. So maybe it moves down, but not efficiently at all. So. It's not useful, I don't think. Yes?
What's the copy number of the honeysweet plant that you get
left? Honeysweet has one copy of the hairpin, but it also has some copies of scents. One copy of scents, one copy of hairpin. Yeah.
Have you found out where it's located in the genome?
Yeah. We've sequenced the whole genome of honeysweet. We know exactly where it is. And it hasn't interrupted any genes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes?
So the FT gene, is that Arabidopsis?
No, that's from poplar. Yeah.
So I was wondering if there is a homologous gene in Prunus, that's a pretty wide family that you can use in cysteine.
Yeah, may be able to use a gene, but we've done some work in terms of cisgenics, the genes haven't worked, and I don't know why. It could be because they're recognized and they're regulated. So when we have this gene from another species, may not be regulated the same, but we haven't done much work in that area. That's just hypothesis.
Honeysweet is a C5 line?
That's C5. Yeah, honeysweet is C5. Yeah. Yes?
Do